molestarme.
On a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dulari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dulari difference today by visiting your nearest Dulari Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
Also brought to you by the 1994 classic film, The Mask, featuring Jim Carrey.
For the amount of content that this movie has given us on the Halford and Bruff Show, I don't actually think I've ever seen the movie, The Mask.
Wait, are you kidding
really?
Me?
No.
You haven't seen The Mask?
I don't think it's like a must-see for everyone, is it?
Yes, it is. You've got to watch it once. It's very good.
It's like on the Criterion
collection. It's a lot of it's one of Jim Carrey's best movies. It's
like
really
Ben
fun.
You need to see Ben-Hur, The Godfather, and The Mask.
Yeah,
Was that the first time Cameron Diaz was...
That was her breakout role, yeah.
Yeah.
That was like her big movie, and then she became huge after
right.
that. But yeah, no, I mean, it's people often say it's... You know, things like The Godfather, things like Citizen Kane, and things like The Mask, those are experiences.
Those are the big three.
Yeah, those are the big three.
The sequel,
yeah.
The Son of the Mask, is also a must-watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to get in there.
Pat Steinberg is going to join the program at 7:30 to preview tonight's game between the Canucks and the Calgary Flames. Pat, of course, going to give us the preview from the Flames side of things. It is Fan Appreciation Night at Rogers Arena tonight. Last home game of the year. Do they do the awards tonight?
Yeah.
And they also give their jerseys off their backs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a real fun night at Rogers Arena. The biggest thing, of course, is that the Canucks need 1 point, and they will clinch the Pacific Division. They can do that tonight against Calgary.
Just a reminder, we are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec. Yeah.
I said earlier in the show, like, there's two main objectives for tonight. One is clinch the division, and number two is get Thatcher Demko up to speed. I suppose there's a few other ones. Continue the, I don't know, get locked in on the lines.
Should they just
like
play
the forward lines?
Should they just play horribly defensively and just pepper him with shots? Would that be good for him?
Yeah, that'd be actually funny.
Like, that'd be like, we'll just give it would get him into it, right?
Yeah, we'll just give him two games in one, so we don't have to play him in the Winnipeg.
I mean, there
series.
Is a method to this madness. I think they should do this.
Here's the problem:
the worst defensive game of the year.
They want to clinch the division.
They need the point,
right? They need the point.
Demko better step up.
Yeah, I mean, Edmonton could still give the Canucks their magic number by, failing to win one of their last two games. I think they finish against Arizona and Colorado. But the Canucks want to get this done. The Canucks want to get this out of the way. Mm-hmm. And the forward lines, for me, it's been an interesting storyline to follow because for a while now, it looked like, all right, Rick Tocchet seems pretty married to this idea of JT Miller between Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland and Brock Besser up on the first line with Pettersson and Hoglander. And I remember asking a bunch of guests, like, do you think this is the way the Canucks are going to look when they go into the playoffs? And they're like, yeah, probably. And in the back of my mind, I'm kind of like, I don't love that because it leaves the bottom six look so meh. And, you know, I guess I wonder if Rick Tocchet had always planned this, but as soon as Elias Lindholm came back, boom, suddenly he was the third line center. Mm-hmm. Between Joshua and Garland. Brock Besser goes back to play with JT Miller. Pew Suter goes back to play with those two. And then Ilya Mikheyev gets the bump up to the first line with Pettersson and Hoglander. And I'd be curious to know what Rick Tocchet's thinking about that was. Did he just feel like, listen, if we're going to have any success, then we need our bottom six to be a strength of our team. We need our bottom six to be a difference maker against potential teams in the playoffs or potential playoff opponents. He said before that, you know, he's fully aware of how important a four-line or even a three-line team is in the playoffs. He noted the success of the fourth line for Vegas, and of course he was the coach in Pittsburgh when they had that third line of Hagelin, Bonino, and Kessel that was such a difference maker for them in one of their Stanley Cup runs. And I also just wonder if he thought at the end of the day, listen, it was a little better for Elias Pettersson when Brock Besser went up there and joined them. But it wasn't amazingly better.
I think this is the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Is what you've got. Again, this is going to be the second consecutive game in the practice lines last night. So just to reiterate for those that are unaware, it's Pugh Suter with JT Miller and Brock Besser. It's Nils Höglander with Pettersson and Mikheyev. And then it's the old third line with a new center, Joshua and Garland with Elias Lindholm as the center. I think it's the way to go. I think it's the smartest
I think so
move.
Too. I agree. Now, Keith and Kitz text in, I like the current lines, but I wish Tok would swap Podkolzin for Mikheyev. That's the only change I'd like to see. Yeah, I mean, I've thought of that too. But there's the trust factor, especially defensively, with a young guy like Podkolzin who hasn't been with the team for most of the year. And say what you will about Mikheyev's finishing, the rest of his game has improved in the last little while. Everything swooned for Mikheyev for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a point halfway through the season or whatever way through the season, we were kind of like, I don't know if there's anything that this guy's bringing to the lineup. And I think he has looked a little more lively out there.
He's looked faster.
He's looked a little stronger on pucks. His finishing is an issue, for sure. And so is the Canucks scoring at 5-on-5, and so that doesn't help when you're literally putting one of the Canucks' worst finishers on a line with Elias Pettersson.
Mm-hmm. Right? Not great.
Now, Mikheyev.
I don't know how Mikheyev has 11 goals this year. Like, 11 seems high to me.
With his finishing ability?
Yeah, like, and it's a low total, but it seems high.
He started out with like 10 in his first 30-odd games.
No, I know. The majority of his production was in October, November, December.
Mm.
It's been a real struggle, but oddly.
So he's due.
Yeah.
I mean, Pugh Suter scored the other day.
Yeah, I know.
That was big for him.
Here's the thing with Mikheyev.
Maybe he needs to be on a line with Tyler Myers, because that was a nice pass from Tyler Myers.
That's true. Maybe he can move Tyler Myers up to the forward group. I do think that there's enough the one sign that I liked about Mikheyev's game, aside, you know, the woeful finishing was its own thing. Eye test-wise, he looks like a faster, more dynamic skater, which was always his calling card, and which was somewhat hampered by the fact he, you know, tore and then played on the torn ACL. I try and remain optimistic about the guy because I think he's got enough tools in his toolbox to be an effective forward. Like the kind of guy that can make things happen, and then just by volume, maybe the goals or the production will come. The problem is that there's zero evidence of this from the regular season because Mikheyev has been given lots of looks in some pretty plum opportunities and positions, and it's really been
it's also his reputation. Like, he didn't come to Vancouver and lose his scoring touch.
But he came with a guy that could at least score 20.
Because
he did.
Right. But in Toronto, that was the thing that all...
He scored 20 in 53 games, I might add, which in retrospect seems crazy.
For Toronto?
Yeah, he had 21 goals in 53 games. And then his first year in Vancouver, he had 13 and 46. So if you extrapolate it out over 82 games, you're like, okay, he's not a terrific finisher, but you know how, like, remember Michael Grabner would occasionally score 20? I think Grabner almost scored 30 one year, but he wasn't a good
finisher. Half of them were shorthanded, I think.
Yeah, and he wasn't a good finisher either. You know, it was almost like a volume thing. It's like, well, if you take 500 shots, maybe 20 of them will go
in. But sometimes you watch NHL players and be like, man, that guy's just snake bitten. Like, you just can't buy a goal.
I felt that at times with Mikheyev.
No. I'm saying, let me finish. Yeah. Because I feel the complete opposite. Because when I see Mikheyev in his attempts at finishing, I'm like, I see why you have trouble finishing, right? Like,
he was snake bitten sometimes.
No. Yeah. How many times has he gone in on a breakaway and tried the deke, and you're like, all right, you got to lift the puck a little bit?
No, and then he can't.
Like, he just, you're
times.
Like, what are you doing out there? What are you doing? Did you not shoot the puck as a kid or something? What's going on?
There are definitely times where he looks like a guy that can't finish. Like, finishing is not your
strong
suit.
Most of the time.
I just think that there are certain elements of him where he's gotten a bit unlucky at times as well.
Okay.
Come on.
I'm telling you my opinion, and I'm telling you that when I watch him play, I'm like, there's a guy that looks like he has trouble finishing, right? And there's got to be a better way to say that.
Bitten by a snake.
Right?
He was bitten by a snake.
Snake bitten. Well, his hands were bitten by snakes like multiple times, and that's why he's having trouble finishing.
You know who's not snake bitten right now?
Who?
Andre Kuzmenko. I do want to say, because we've received a lot of texts into the Dunbar Lumber text message and basket about this. Kuzmenko is one of the hottest scorers in the NHL. He has 16 points, so 9 goals and 7 assists in his last 9 games. He's scored 14 goals since being acquired by the Flames.
You know what would be a great poll question?
What?
If you threw a poll question out there, who would be more valuable to the Canucks right now?
It is a great poll question.
Andre Kuzmenko or Elias Lindholm? But I would actually, honestly, here's the thing. I would say Lindholm because it always comes back to the thing that, like, you're not the coach, I'm not the coach, A-Dog's not the coach, Laddie's not the coach, so nobody listening to this show, unless Rick Tocchet is listening to the show, is the coach. And Rick Tocchet did not trust Andre Kuzmenko.
Right.
And Andre Kuzmenko, I don't think, would be playing in the big moments or even, you know, the games.
Well, I wanted the conversation and the question you asked, I actually wanted to put another Canuck in there. Now, I know it's more of a hypothetical, but who would you rather have right now going into the playoffs in that spot, Mikheyev or Kuzmenko? Because Mikheyev gives you much more solidified hockey, two-way presence, skating ability, but he also can't score goals. And Kuzmenko can.
I'd also rather have.
I thought he was just snake bitten.
There's a small element. So he's due. There's a large element of not being able to score goals.
I'd rather have Lindholm in the playoffs than Kuzmenko.
Agreed.
If we're picking the two,
I would too. And I'm not just being a homer. Like I think Lindholm has the potential to be. You know, by the way, it just goes to show you how much the NHL has changed and how much more scoring there is right now. Because when Manny Malhotra was with the Canucks. Weren't we all just happy that he was good defensively?
If he scored a goal, it was
like there
that's
was
awesome.
there was no concern really about, unless I'm totally misremembering it, no concern about his lack of offense. The Canucks just treated that third line when Manny Malhotra was the 3C. It was just a pure checking line.
Yeah,
and you were happy that Manny Malhotra went out there and won faceoffs on the PK, which he often did, and that is really valuable. I mean, faceoffs, I think, as an overall stat, is a little bit overrated, but you do want to have one guy, preferably two guys, that can go out there on the PK and win those draws because it's like you win that draw, bang it down the ice, that's 30 seconds you've killed off, essentially.
Yep.
And then you put the other team in the challenge of like, all right, you got to game the zone again, you got to set up, and sometimes that can be tough. It is very valuable, and I like that the Canucks have a guy out there, a right shot faceoff man, which they've needed, in Lindholm. And to me, I just wonder if we can go into the playoffs, because the NHL has changed in the last year. Can you go into the playoffs and be like, all right, Lindholm, you be good defensively, and any offense at 5-on-5 is a bonus. It would be nice if Pettersson was going a little bit better offensively 5-on-5, because that would make it a little more easy to swallow if Lindholm doesn't have that production, right?
I think we need to come to grips with the fact that they don't have the ideal roster construction of forward. They haven't since the beginning of the year. And then Lindholm, let's be dead honest, didn't correct enough of the issues that we thought he was going to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When he came in, I think that a lot of people thought that his versatility was going to allow Tocchet and this team to do a lot more things to round out. They've had a great year. It's been mostly positive, but the construction isn't perfect, and that's fine because in a cap league, it's hard to have the perfect ideal roster construction.
There are no perfect teams out there right
exactly,
now.
Exactly right.
Like if you look, I could pick apart any NHL team
that's
and just
true.
Be like, well, I mean, we're just talking about Colorado, right?
Yep.
They kind of addressed the 2C issue, although we'll see how that works in the playoffs.
Middlestad has been hot garbage.
For the last little while. Yeah, I haven't even checked on it. Yeah, right?
Terrible.
So, and then they've got, you know, big-time goaltending. Like, the Stanley Cup winners, typically in the salary cap age, there's at least one part of the roster where you're like, wow, how'd they do that with him? Mm-hmm. Look at last year's winner. Aiden Hill was the goalie.
Yep.
You know, and then there are
the
other teams.
And the year before that, it was Darcy Kemper.
Yeah, there are other teams where you're kind of like, wow, you know, and it's not always the goaltending, right? I remember when the Penguins' second Stanley Cup, when Chris Letang was hurt, you're kind of like, how'd they do with that blue line? Mm-hmm. Right?
Every year, it's there. You kind of make do, and you paper over some issues, and you fill gaps. By the way, I just want to circle back on this Kuzmenko narrative here. I think Jason and I are very much in lockstep, and if there's any confusion about where we stand on this, Kuzmenko was not long for this team as long as Rick Tocchet was the head coach. Mm-hmm. And to be quite honest, I think what he's doing right now is probably more reflective of who he is as a player, is that Kuzmenko's a guy that'll probably get his cherries and apples when there's no pressure on. Like, I know that
Calgary's- Or he doesn't have to do like the complete job that Rick Tocchet was asking him to do.
Yeah, you can, I mean, we'll talk to Pat Steinberg. Maybe we're missing something here about this, because I know that a lot of people are really relitigating this right now.
There are guys out there that get their points, but then they'll be not trusted in the playoffs. Like, I think of Anthony Duclair.
Sure.
Guys like him that can put up points, and you're like, wow, why? And maybe, listen, I don't want to throw Anthony Duclair under the bus or anything, but, like, there are guys out there that they move around to different teams for a reason, because on, like, if you look at their stats, you're like, oh, we need goal scoring.
Yeah.
And then you bring them into the lineup, and you're kind of like, oh, he scores goals, but he kind of just does his own thing out there,
the
right?
The reason he gets his offense is because he cheats on the other side of the ice, right? I mean, it's not – Kuzmenko's not the first guy, but all I'm saying is this is 2 years in a row now where he's had real bona fide production playing in games in February, March, and April that don't matter, and playing on teams that are way out of the playoff picture. And though, I mean, that does need to be taken into consideration. Like, it's great that he's Calgary's leading goal scorer since he's been acquired. He's got 14 goals since he was traded to Calgary. But Calgary has not played a game of significance in an awfully long time, right? They are running out the string right now. They lost 9 of their last 11 before they had wins against the Ducks in Anaheim on Friday, which is not a tough opponent. And then they played the Coyotes in Calgary on Sunday night and won 6-5. So both those games, it was a 9-goal game against the Ducks and an 11-goal game against the Coyotes. I think it's fair to say that defense wasn't the main priority for anybody in those two games. And maybe those are the kind of games where Kuzmenko's going to thrive.
Gary Garrison texted in, and he wanted an update on the auction date in Arizona. He wanted an update from the countdown clock.
Let's go!
Which still exists on the Coyotes website. And it is 72 days, 3 hours, 47 minutes, and 41 seconds until the land auction.
Does that transfer to the Salt Lake site when they move?
I think it just goes to alexmorello.com.
Yeah.
He's got the land
some
auction.
Sort of time zone change we need to take
that's
into account.
That's all that's
the
on
clock.
The website. Like, it's completely blank except the time auction. There's nothing else on there.
That would be funny, though, if the NHL gave him that right to have the team in 5 years, or they gave him that window to get the expansion team in Arizona if he did a bunch of things, but then the NHL was also allowed to openly sabotage those efforts.
See, I don't even think they need to openly sabotage it. I think they'll just sit back and watch it. I mean, all due respect to Alex Morello, who I'm sure has been very successful in various facets of his life.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is one of those things. It's like when you let a kid, you know, make his own mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, sure, pack your own lunch today.
See how that goes.
Let's see what happens, you know?
But what if he gets it done? He's got a lot of money to work with now, right?
Right. But there's also the legal entrapments and entanglements where they don't want to put any roadblocks in front of him so he could make this litigious, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thing.
Yeah, no, I know. You'd have to do it secretly.
So you have
Gary
to,
Bettman
yeah.
would have to go out there in like a black hoodie or something like that. And what are those things called? Like a balaclava? And I don't know. You could pour toxic waste all over the site.
Like, you know, Breaking Bad, Mike Ehrmantraut? You need one of those guys. Just a guy that's going to do stuff for
yeah.
you.
But you know Morello's got one of those guys too. Right?
That's true. His probably sucks.
We had a good thing here, Walter.
Yeah, right? That's it. Yeah. You can't have a Walter, but you need a Mike.
What do you think the PA would think about Alex Morello owning another team?
Oh, so that was the big... When I asked...
Have you read some of the reporting? Like,
yes.
Katie Strang did a really big piece for The Athletic a couple years ago about the culture at the Arizona Coyotes under Alex Morello. And it basically sounds like everyone that's worked for this guy and his right-hand man, Gutierrez,
yep.
Like, they're just like, this place is like a nightmare to work for.
Well, there's two things. One, I think it was very telling that Marty Walsh, one of the first major proclamations as NHLPA head, was he took direct aim at the Arizona Coyotes as an organization, right? And threw them under the bus. He's like, Mullet Arena isn't acceptable.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get this guy on the phone, and I can't even get him on the phone. I think the
they
other
won't talk to me, yeah.
Yeah, I think the so I think that was very symbolic as a gesture as to what the PA thinks about the Arizona Coyotes. I think the other interesting thing is that, you know, we tried to play audio from Friedge yesterday before our system crashed, and Friedge made some very pointed remarks about how the players feel betrayed by this ownership group led by Morello and Gutierrez.
Yeah, they called them cowardly.
Right? I think
because
that,
they essentially lied to the players. They're like, oh, don't worry, the land auction is going pretty well.
And that to me is
72 days, 3 hours, 44 minutes, and 50 seconds.
You can just feel it getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be another huge indicator of the lack of trust and the consternation that people are going to have about giving this group another shot at owning and having NHL players in their employ. Like, you know, like who wants to go work for these guys again?
Yeah.
After they've completely
eroded the trust. What about the fan base in Arizona? The fan base in Arizona hates Morello. Because they feel lied to as well.
So I saw a lot of not hockey generalists, but the sports pundits in the greater Arizona area, the guys that have the columns and the newspapers and the talk radio shows, and they're all like, good riddance. Thank God this guy's gone.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't, you know.
But he's not gone.
The team, well, they don't know that, right? They're talking about this team and this iteration of it. What they're saying is love hockey, love the players, hated the organization, right? And this isn't even just Morello. This goes back to Bill Moyes, and then the brief Jim Balsillie intervention. Like, it always seemed like this comical slapstick organization that
there
could
been
never
a
be taken
lot
seriously.
Of hucksters that have gone in there,
right?
And said, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to fix it. Don't worry. Trust us. And
right. The
fans, because they're fans, a lot of them have trusted them. And they'll be like, all right, I think this guy's the guy that's going to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
None of them got it done.
Yeah, and because there's been good people affiliated with the organization, right? Like Shane Doan. And, you know, the interesting thing now is that you're starting to see, almost in spite of how lousy the NHL has been there, you're seeing the fruits of it because there's tons of players coming from Arizona now,
right?
Austin Matthews is a shining example of what happens when you introduce hockey into a
non-traditional market. The market does have potential. They just have not done it well.
It's almost done it in spite of the Coyotes,
weirdly
enough. Right, for this dysfunctional organization, they've managed to put down roots, and it says more about the players and the coaches and the staff than it does about the owners.
Yeah, it was Jerry Moyes, by the way.
What'd you call him?
Bill Moyes? Doesn't really matter.
It's his brother. His brother.
Boots Moyes. But like that always happens, you know, when the NHL is so desperate to find an owner to invest in these troubled franchises, whether it's been the Pittsburgh Penguins at times, or the Arizona Coyotes, the Nashville Predators, the Islanders for a time. You go like, I don't know about this guy, but he's got the money, and we really want to stay in this market. He might not be perfect, but all right, fine, we'll accept you into our club. And then it's like a couple years later, and it's like, we should not have accepted you into the club.
Coming up on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, Pat Steinberg from Calgary is going to join us to preview tonight's opponent, the Calgary Flames, tonight, 7 o'clock, Rogers Arena, the final home game of the season, and fan appreciation night at Rogers Arena. And before we go to break, I need to tell you about JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit them on the internet at janpro.ca. Pat Steinberg coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
We regret to announce the following layoffs, which I will read in alphabetical order.
Granato, Don.
That is all.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a Tuesday. This will get you going, eh? It zigs when you zag? Like, you think it's going to go one way and it goes in a different way?
This is music from another era, man.
I love it.
I feel like you could do like a, it's time for Blue Jays baseball. Steve will take the mound today.
That's great. This is a great song.
It is Fan Appreciation Night at Rogers Arena tonight.
They're going to play this song.
Kirk McLean and Dave Babbitt are going to be signing autographs pregame, 5-7 in the plaza. It's a true story, by the way.
Okay, that wasn't part of the bit.
No, that's actually what's happening. They are. You can get an autograph from who Jason Bruff coined as the strongest man to ever walk the planet Earth, Dave Babbitt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For those that don't know, one time, it was during the pandemic and we were just trying to get anybody on the show. We had Gerald Diddick on the show. And one of your questions.
I was nervous.
Yeah.
I was nervous because he was my favorite player when.
Jason had a Gerald Diddick jersey
as
a youth.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the questions you asked Gerald Diddick, I swear to God, it was so authentic and enthusiastic. Is Dave Babbitt strong?
Yeah.
He's like, yes, Jason. He's very strong. It was a good moment.
Bruff's first question. Remember when you played for the Canucks?
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
That was awesome. You had lots of fights.
Pat Steinberg is waiting patiently on hold here to preview tonight's game. It is fan appreciation night at Rogers Arena. Canucks Flames, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Before we get to Pat, real quick, this show is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. This hour of the program, hour two, is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Let's go to the phone lines now. Pat Steinberg joins us live on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Pat. How are you?
Good, boys. How are you?
We are well. We are eagerly anticipating tonight's game for a variety of reasons. Not only is it Fan Appreciation Night, the Canucks can clinch the Pacific Division with just a single point if they get one off the Flames tonight. What's it been like covering the Flames over the last couple months? I know they've been out of the playoff picture for a while, but hey, you got Andrei Kuzmenko leading the charge now. That must be exciting.
Yeah, it's that's given us something to talk about, at least. It's been a grind. It's been the most eventful season that I've ever covered this team, because we had so much to talk about for the first two-thirds of the year, right? Like, came into the season not knowing what was going to happen with Lindholm and with Hanifin and Tanev and all of them, Zadorov and all these pending unrestricted free agents. We didn't know what was going to happen. And the team played poorly to start, then played a little bit better. They were kind of on the fringe of playoff conversation. They were close. They were always in the mix, but they have not been in a playoff spot since like mid-October. But they've always been close, and there's always been this, okay, what's going to happen? And then Hanifin's close to signing, but he's backed away. Or are they going to be close to signing Lindholm here? Like, have they got a deal on the table that Lindholm's going to accept? And, you know, these conversations dominated everything that we were talking about with the Flames for the first, two-thirds of the season. And then Lindholm gets traded in late January, and then they still play well. You know, they were able to make up for the Lindholm loss. Kuzmenko helps them by giving them a little bit more of an offensive punch. They move some things around. They're still playing well. And then it kind of was this countdown until Tanev got dealt to Dallas, and then exactly a week later, Hanifin got moved to Las Vegas. And all throughout that time, they were competitive. And then these deals get made, trade deadline hits, and ever since the trade deadline, what has happened on the ice is exactly what we expected to happen. But now there's no other interesting storylines to go around, right? So it went from this eventful and chock full of storyline season to, oh, geez, they're playing out the string, and it's hard to come up with interesting storylines for this game tonight between the Flames and San Jose Sharks. It's like, holy, this is all of a sudden a difficult grind. So last month and a bit has been tough. It's been different. The Flames have not been this far out and they have not been eliminated this early in a long time. Like, this is not this is not your picture of success organization, but at the very least from a, you know, interest standpoint, they've been in it up until the end most years, or close until the end most years, which gives games stakes. The games have not had stakes for a long time, boys. So yeah, it's been a lot of, oh, okay, what's Andre Kuzmenko all about here? And of late, he's been pretty good. Or it's, what's Connor Zeri down the middle going to look like? Or what is this D pairing going to look like tonight? Or what is this AHL recall going to do? That's been more of what the storylines have been over the last little bit. But hey, Kuzmenko's given him something to talk about, at least. At least that's been a positive story over the last couple of weeks here.
How much money did Elias Lindholm leave on the table in Calgary?
So we've talked about this a lot, and you know, first of all, that Lindholm Joshua Garland line did quite the job against Draisaitl on Saturday night, and I was watching that game saying, that's one of the really good things that Lindholm is going to bring Vancouver now that he's back playing anyway. I don't know how healthy he is, but now that he's back playing, you're like, you know, that's really going to help Vancouver in the playoffs. But the numbers that Lindholm is putting up and the numbers that he will put up this year and the relative poor nature of his overall season, guys, I think the highest the Flames got was the Scheifele number in Winnipeg, which is 8.5. Now, I think the Flames went the full 8. So we're talking eight years, $68 million. I think that's as high as the Flames were willing to go, or at the very least, that's as high as the Flames had gotten in terms of conversations on what a Lindholm deal might look like. And it just never happened. Mm-hmm. The Lindholm camp was still looking for more. So you take, say that was what their final offer was, and there was $68 million on the table. So now you're talking about if he goes to unrestricted free agency, well, now he doesn't get that 8 year. So 8.5 is thrown out the window. And yeah, I mean, are we talking about in unrestricted free agency? Are we talking about him getting 6.5? Could he get to 7? So there's another, like, say it's 6.5. Well, there's another $14 million. So like, we're talking about in excess of $25 million, guys. Like, this has been one of the worst examples of betting on yourself that I can remember in a long, long time. And I am a massive Elias Lindholm appreciator. He has been one of my favorite players to watch since getting to Calgary in 2018, and obviously not here anymore, but I love the two-way game. I love the way he plays. I love how smart he is. I'm a really, really big fan of Lindholm, but it just has not gone well from a production standpoint. Like, if you're going to bet on yourself, you have got to be ready to put up career numbers. You got to do what Johnny Gaudreau did 2 years ago when he bet on himself and had 115 points. Not go the complete opposite direction. So I still think Elias is going to be extremely important for the Canucks come postseason time. And I still think he's going to be a nice fit when it's all said and done going into the postseason. But from a straight up raw production standpoint and what that's going to translate to on his next deal, which was supposed to be his kind of home run contract. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that he's done himself any favors.
Pat, this is going to sound a little harsh, but can you tell me why the Flames won't be a pretty bad team for the next few years? Because when I look at their roster and I look at their prospects group, I see a team that I don't know how they find their way out of this soon.
Well, I mean, can I tell you why they're not going to be a really bad team? I mean, that's kind of what they want to be in some ways. Is like, I don't think this team is going right down to the studs. Like, I don't think they're going to try to scorch earth this thing like Chicago's done, or the way things are trending in San Jose. And I don't think that's what the Flames are trying to do. But I also don't think that we're talking about a team that's realistically trying to, you know, okay, yeah, well, this season, shucks, we traded away all these guys, but next year, watch out, we're going to be back. And I don't think that's – I don't think as much as the team publicly is going to say, yeah, you know what, we want to stay competitive and you know, we don't want to tank. And I think there's an understanding and a realization that this is going to take a little bit of time. And you know, Craig Conroy took over, the general manager took over a little less than a year ago when he was hired in May. And, you know, the first thing that he had to do was, you know, clean up a number of messes that were left for him. I mean, Brad Treliving did a lot of good things as general manager of the Flames, but he didn't necessarily set up his successor to have an easy job because you had all these contracts expiring at the same time. There's this Jonathan Huberdeau albatross that's on the books, and that's not an easy thing to deal with. And, you know, you had this Daryl Sutter mess that, you know, was cleaned up, but that has left some remnants and that has left some, there's still some side effects that this team is experiencing because of the Daryl Sutter experience and all, you know, the Johnny Gaudreau. I think there was some, I think there's probably some mismanagement on Johnny Gaudreau and he leaves, and Matthew Tkachuk's trade looks not anywhere near as good as a player of that caliber should be bringing back to the Flames. And so now Craig Conroy takes over and this is his team. He had to do a lot of work just to clean up those messes before even putting what his vision is into place and before really starting to build or retool this team in the vision that he wants. So I think that's going to take some time. And, you know, they've got five first round picks in the next three drafts. They have picked up some other draft capital. They've picked up some decent prospects for the future, and now they can kind of get to work and really trying to make this team younger and really trying to make this team a better group for when they want to be competitive again. I mean, we've got a new building that is slated to open in the fall of 2027 here in Calgary, guys, and so that's a little bit more than 3 years from now, and I think that's when this team would ideally like to be competitive again, is for the opening of that new building. And when Edmonton opened their new building, they went to game 7 of round 2 in year 1, and it was kind of this perfect first year in a brand new facility. And that, I think, is kind of the similar idea as to what the Flames would like to do. So they've got these draft picks. They've got some opportunity to make a couple more trades. Like, who knows what's going to happen with some of these other veterans on the team, starting with Jacob Markstrom. So there's still some work to be done, and there's now a general manager who can start to put that vision in place. So honestly, guys, like, I don't know if I can tell you that they're going to be a really good team here in the next couple of years. You're right, the roster doesn't really look like it's trending that way. There's not a lot of star power on this team. I do think it's going to be a few years where they're not a playoff team, and a few years where they have to kind of go through those bumps to get to where they want to be and get to the type of group that they want to be competitive again in 3 or 4 years here.
I think Jonathan Huberdeau is probably unmovable at this point.
Yep.
What about Nazem Kadri, though? He's got he's 33 years old. He's got, what, 5 or 6 years left on his deal, $7 million cap hit. He's still a pretty good player, though. Do you think is there a possibility that he could maybe go to management this offseason and be like, hey, man, this isn't what I signed up for. Let's see if we can do something here.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. There's a few guys that you wonder a little bit if that is going to be their tact. And you know, when we get to exit interviews on Friday this week, you know, you wonder what that conversation is going to be like with Nazem, who I got to be perfectly honest, has been one of the real bright spots, real positive stories on this team this year. I mean, Kadri has been outstanding from start to finish this year. He's been their best skater, and probably with Jacob Markstrom's play dipping here over the last month, he's probably been their MVP start to finish. I mean, Markey was their MVP for the first two-thirds of the season, no question. But since he came back from injury in mid-March, his game has dipped. And so Kadri's game has not dipped at any point this year. And he's done himself a lot of favors, if that is kind of the way the conversation goes. The problem is that, as you mentioned, there's still $35 million left on that deal. 5 years at $7 million, and you mentioned it, he's 33 years old. And I just, you know, when the Flames signed him to that deal in the summer of 2022, you think you understood what they were trying to do. It's like, okay, well, that's at the time a 31-year-old guy, seven-year deal. You know, that's not the greatest. That's not always the best play, but this team's trying to be competitive and go all in for 2 or 3 years after making the Tkachuk trade and losing Gaudreau. And you're like, okay, I guess I see what they're trying to do. Obviously, that hedge has paid off horribly, and they haven't been anywhere close to as good as what Brad Treliving was envisioning them to be when he made all those decisions. But it's still, I still am a little worried about how much return they'd all actually get for a guy like Kadri at his age with what's left on his deal. And that then becomes a real dilemma. Like, if you're the Flames and you've got your MVP of the season, the guy that has unlocked everybody, Andrei Kuzmenko, trying to figure out what the hell he is. Well, put him on Nazem Kadri's line and boom, he's got 16 points in 9 games. Connor Zeri, rookie. Yep. Put him on Kadri's line. Martin Pospisil, rookie, put him on Kadri's line. Like, this guy has been the full on fixer for the team this year. And you want to get like the return that you deserve for a guy like that. And so if he comes to you and says, well, you know what, guys, I'd probably like to be traded and go play for a contender, but then nobody's giving you the value that you would want for a guy of that caliber. Like, what do you do if you're the Flames? Do you grant that request and make a trade where you're not getting the type of value you want? That's now that all the UFAs have been traded and now that all those decisions are made, now the trade decisions become a little bit more difficult. With Kadri, Markstrom's a little bit easier, but you know, what about a guy like Rasmus Anderson, mm-hmm. or other veterans on this team? Like, you can't trade everybody just because they may not want to be a part of a rebuild, whether they signed up for it or not. They still are under contract, and some of the guys are going to have to be a part of it, at least in the short term. So I think there's a chance they could move Kadri. I do, and I think there's a chance that, as you said, Kadri goes to them and says, oh, this is not necessarily what I'm the most keen for. I just don't know if it is the most realistic scenario that they get the type of value they'd want to move a guy who's been that important to them this year.
Do they have a decision to make on Kuzmenko this offseason as well? Because he's only got 1 year left and then he's UFA. I suppose they could hang on to him and trade him as a rental if they can't re-sign him. But what do you think they're thinking about Kuzmenko right now?
Well, I think so. When Kuzmenko was brought in as part of the Lindholm trade, I think that they were like, okay, let's see how this goes right away and see if maybe we've got an asset to flip at this year's trade deadline. See if we can get some more assets for a guy that maybe a team would be interested in. And then Kuzmenko was not very good to start his tenure in Calgary. Now, we found out there are reasons for that. He got hit with a nasty illness, and that lingered up for quite some time. And he lost some weight, and you know, it hit him pretty hard. And he was also dealing with pretty nasty back spasms that was really, they were really limiting his mobility and made it really difficult for him to play at a high level. So now that those two things are behind him, and now that they've put him on Nazem Kadri's line, you're like, oh, okay, this is a little bit more like what people are talking about when it comes to Kuzmenko's high-end skill and high-end offense. But it wasn't in time to make a deal at this year's trade deadline. And now that he's doing what he's doing, I still am a little skeptical there would be a ton of trade interest in him this off season, because, you know, he's doing this all when the pressure is off, and that's kind of one of the books maybe on Andre is, as you guys would know, is okay. Well, when things are good, or when things are difficult rather, and when games mean something, like, okay, what exactly is this guy? Now pressure's off and he's freewheeling and he's making behind the back, between the legs passes, and you're like, okay, this guy's got some ridiculous skill, but is it enough to entice teams to be like, yeah, you know what? We give you something of value to bring this guy in. So I think the play is probably for the Flames to hold on to him, not make any type of decision on a contract, come into next season with Kuzmenko, see if he and Kadri can pick up where they've left off the last couple of weeks here to start training camp and start the regular season, and then really start to get a gauge on what you've got in him as you go into the regular season next year. And if things are great and this guy's scoring at a 30-35 goal pace like he was last year, like he has been here over the last couple of weeks, well, then maybe you've got a guy that you can move at next year's trade deadline. Or maybe you've got a guy for a team that is going to be extremely challenged to score going forward. Maybe you've got a guy that you think about extending for a year or two. And if all of a sudden that's the play, and all of a sudden you've got a guy that's playing with Kadri, maybe that's something that helps keep Nazem satisfied if he's here. So they've got options with him. And I'll be honest, guys, after the first 2, 3, 4 weeks of Kuzmenko as a Flame, I didn't think they had many options. I thought they were kind of like, yeah, you got to play this contract out and then say goodbye. He's been that so much better that at least now it feels like they've got some options going into the final year of Kuzmenko's contract. I'll give him credit. He's been a lot of fun to watch here, and it's definitely made it so that the narrative surrounding him, I'm like, where the hell do you fit this guy? He can't play on the fourth line. He's not scoring in your top. Not like, at least now he started to show what he can do as a member of this team.
Pat, this was great, man. Thanks for taking the time to do it. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. Have a good one.
You too, boys. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. That's Pat Steinberg from Fan 960 in Calgary, Sportsnet Flames radio host here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Coming up on the Halford and Brough Show, Brendan Batchelor is going to join us. He'll be on the call tonight for the last Canucks home game of the regular season. It's Fan Appreciation Night at Rogers Arena tonight, 7 o'clock against the Calgary Flames. Batch will be on the call, and he'll be on our show next. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.